Hey there, welcome back to the Support Ops Hangout. This is our weekly podcast that helps you deliver a better support experience to your customers. I'm your host, Chase Clements. On today's show, we're going to talk about the metrics that you need to be watching as a new manager. But before we do that, let's go ahead and introduce our panel. It's the three amigos this week. I'm really excited. We're the three amigos now. That's just how it is. We've got to come up with a cool word for a quartet when Chase Livingston gets back. I got nothing. But anyways, the three of us. First up, Carolyn from Buffer. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm curious what the chair thing is over your left corner, like left shoulder.
So I'm in an Airbnb, and I have a couple things that I need to warn you about. One of them is that poster, which you might see.
That's fantastic.
Which, if you can see the whole thing, is adorable, and you can tell that it's where the wild things are. But if you can't, it looks like a creepy monster poster. And that is some sort of back thing. The Airbnb host was like, yeah, you should definitely get in that. It like flips you upside down. So I have not gone near it because I'm terrified of it.
I didn't know if that was like one of those things where the hotel says like, we have a gym, and it's that one bicycle in the corner.
Yeah. Well, I gave an interview and someone was like, is that a high chair in the background? I was like, oh God, no, I'm just starting excited. I can't sit here. I need to face this way.
Oh, and then next up, Jeff from Wistia. How are you?
I am good, Chase. I'm good. It's a good Monday.
Did the poster disappear or is it just out of frame? Jeff's poster. Wasn't there a Marvel or superhero one over on your right?
Yeah, it's just out of frame. I have a puzzle on my desk that's in like the midst of being done, and so I don't have quite as much room on my desk as I normally do, so I'm kind of wedged over into a different spot.
Wait, you're a puzzler? I didn't know this.
I didn't either.
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm avid or good at it, but for anybody on the East Coast, we had like negative 20 degrees a few weeks back. You just don't, there's just not much you can do for that like 1 week of negative 20 degrees. So we got super into it. And then now it's just a puzzle that's halfway done.
We'll check back with that weekly to find out when it actually does get done.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, that'll be a fun update.
Yeah, because I've been promising like for a good 75 episodes now that I'm going to paint this room and I still haven't.
So. Agreed. We haven't held you to that.
All right, so this week, let's talk about what we're talking about for this week. Notes. Here we go. As a new manager, it's tempting to track all the things out there. It's kind of one of those, you get into the role and you start hooking up ratings at the end of every support ticket, and you start creating surveys to send out, you start tracking reply times. But what's the really important data that you need to be watching? And what I think that's important, but I think what's also really interesting that we're going to talk about is what can you safely ignore at the beginning? What numbers are other people saying that, yeah, you have to watch this, but nah, you don't really have to. So Jeff, let's start with you on this one. What metrics does Wistia track when it comes to customer-related things?
Everything we can get our hands on. I think, yeah, the broader point here is it's really hard to if you're manually having to track and add up and check in on all of these metrics on a weekly basis, you're way past the point of diminishing returns. But that sometimes you need some of the data there. You need some historical data when you do finally find it useful, and that also the action of like instrumenting something takes a lot of effort, and that can be hard to do on a really fast turnaround as well, right? So like you're not going to get it right. You don't know exactly what data you need. But for us, if you're doing it manually and you also don't need it, that's like a really bad combination. If it's just coming in automatically and you have the ability to like ignore it, but you can get it if you need it, that's like a really good spot to be in. And if it's coming in manually, but you're using it and taking action on it on like a weekly or monthly basis, then that's also a really good place to be in. So there's like a little wonky Venn diagram of place of data that you should actually collect.
Oh, is there no drawing for that Venn diagram?
I didn't think to draw something, but I probably should, yeah.
So I think what's interesting there is if you did have to go manual, out of all the things that you're watching, what's like what top two or three would you pick and actually say, I know these are going to be manual. I know it's going to be an investment of my time, but I think that it's going to be worth it.
Yeah. So I think the things that are important to the team, the support team right now are, the total number of tickets, and how that's changing over time, the number that each teammate is handling, because that's a productivity metric that they track, the type of conversations that are happening, right? So we do a ton of tagging, and then we kind of break things down by tag later, and loosely the response time. I don't think that we get too into, there's like a bunch of different ways you can define response time. I don't think we get too into what they are and setting goals around each different one. So for example, like first time they ever get a response versus the first time that they say a response is satisfactory or something like that. But we do have a general idea of how response time is changing over time. That's important. Those are the metrics that I think are being looked at actively, and that if we had to assign one person to pulling all of those manually, we would consider that an okay trade-off.
Yeah, I like those, especially if I'm a new manager, primarily because those are the ones that I can like directly influence, right? If I see somebody's number of tickets or cases or whatever they're doing in a week gets way out of whack, like I can take action on that without having to rope in other people from the team. So I like those. Carolyn, what about Buffer? What are y'all watching?
I would say in terms of a general recommendation, I thought the like things you can take action on is really great, and should be prioritized above things that you're just like enjoying knowing. I would say in general, we are extraordinarily data poor. You've heard me say on like probably like 6 episodes and 13 episodes ago and like 24 episodes ago, like we're working on data, and like we just don't prioritize the happiness team getting data resources.
It's like my walls and Jeff's puzzle.
Yeah, exactly. Like we have hired several data folks, and I just don't get them. So we do some of this manually, a lot of it / most of it, in fact. And we don't do it well. And sometimes we change one thing about how we track this or that, and then like all of our historical data is worthless. So the things that we are tracking at a product level, which means that they get the data resources and I get to just like steal those numbers and watch them for myself, are things like Net Promoter Score. We do cases per daily active user and like cases per weekly active user for the different product and plan levels. That has been spun as like a product thing, so I get that number because they have people to find that and play with those, massage those numbers. Things that we track sort of manually are response time. Again, that's more of a how are we doing than like a something you can take immediate action on. It's more the is it improving or getting worse. Happiness score, you know, self-reported happiness, which isn't super valuable, I think, because mostly it's almost always in the high 90s and like a few unhappy people, which like, I don't know, it doesn't change drastically enough for that to be all that good of an indicator. And I mean, cases per hero, like what's the average number of tickets that each individual person has to do in order for us to hit 0? That's a valuable one that directly informs hiring. And one that's been super valuable is like really keeping close track of exactly how quickly we can onboard somebody up to full speed. And like, you know, at week 1, what can we expect? And at week 5, what can we expect? And like, where are they completely full time, you know, all firing on all cylinders type happiness hero? Therefore, like how far ahead of that point do we need to hire them? So yeah, that's a whole lot. A lot of those we are not tracking all that closely or, you know, manually.
Yeah, so one thing that was interesting there, it's one thing that it kind of correlates with what I've seen too. The happiness score, the smiley rating at the end of every ticket, that kind of thing. I think there's a tendency for new managers to jump in and it's, oh, well, our support app like offers this, so let's just turn it on and, you know, let it ride. But I've seen the same thing. It's tends to be high 90s, you know, mid to high 90s, and it kind of stays there. Sometimes you'll take a hit if, like with Basecamp, when we launch new versions and people like start frowning, not because of customer interactions, but more like, oh, the product doesn't have this, or oh, the product doesn't do that. You'll see that change. But yeah, is that one that we just kind of need to stop focusing on, even though it's like by default on every support app now?
Me?
Yeah.
I think that the information we get, the qualitative information that we get from those comments is super valuable, especially for training. So for the first like 6 months, we look at the ones that are really happy. What did we do right when somebody says like, I want to adopt Dave? Like, I want him to be my best friend. I want to, like, I legitimately am thinking about trying to hire him away from you. Like, what happens when somebody says that? And what happens when they're like, so we can learn a ton from that, and we do, and I read the extraordinarily like glowing happy ones, and I read the less happy ones, and I think we learn a lot from those. But so I don't think it's worth, so no, I don't think it's something that we should remove, and I don't think it's something that we should pay less attention to. I just find the quantitative data from it is not super useful because it's not representative, I don't think, of a greater population. Like, people either write it when they are like super happy or when they're super unhappy. And there's, you know, only like between like, I think it's like 30% of customers even click a button. So I can find out that number and follow up, but I have that, but I don't have it memorized obviously, cause it's so low that I don't feel super motivated by it, especially cause it's generally in the high 90s.
I would agree with that, and I think that there might be a corollary between the amount of really helpful constructive feedback you get through that form and the amount of really helpful constructive feedback you'd get if you just left an open-ended comment box for, like, what new feature should we add? you're unlikely to get a lot of feedback that you are like, yes, you're exactly right. This is exactly what we should do, and this would apply to all customers. You're more likely to get stuff that you're like, yep, that makes perfect sense given your very specific use case. However, like, that won't work for you next week, and it also won't work for 98% of our other customers. In my experience, the happiness feedback, what do we call it? Satisfaction feedback, I suppose, that you get. I think we've used it to greatest effect for morale purposes, like supporting other teammates. Like, if a brand new customer champion gets their first great review, people just pile on to say like how big of a deal that is and how awesome that is. And we even get, like, we now have two champs that work on Saturdays. And when you see the responses come in for them, it's really great because not only are they're working hard at a time that most people are not expecting them to get support, are not expecting to receive support. So that tends to be the same. I mean, we do NPS reviews on the product side, and the tracking up or down of that number does not seem to have anything to do with the work we're doing. It tends to have a lot more to do with who the individual person was that was filling out the review. I expect it to be about the same for the happiness ratings, but if there's a trend downward, right, that would be something that would kind of freak us out. So it's kind of like qualitative, you know, people get really excited about the happy reviews that their teammates get, and then like the trend, is it going down and why, or is it holding steady and is that a good thing?
Yeah, I think that's how I look at it too. It's one of those where quantitatively that number, that 95 out of 100, 98 out of 100, whatever it is, just doesn't matter unless it's bottoming out, right? Something's obviously going wrong if for the last 14 months that number has been steady, and then now all of a sudden you wake up and you're cratering, like it's just a hockey stick going down. Like that would be cause for alarm. But otherwise, yeah, it's the comments, right? It's the somebody might not feel comfortable seeing in an email reply back to you that an interaction was off or whatever, but they don't have any problem clicking that rating and then leaving a comment there so people could follow up. Flip side of that too, that morale. I mean, we do the same thing as Jeff did. The first time you get a smiley rating and there's great feedback there on it, a great comment on there, we make a huge deal out of that. First time you hit 100 across the board, so a perfect score, we make a huge deal out of that. I think those are really, really special moments, and that's where those numbers really come in handy. Otherwise, yeah, I just don't really pay attention to that, like 95 people out of 100. That just doesn't really do anything for me. And speaking of numbers to kind of ignore, one of the things that I guess even in the last month or so that I've been thinking about, you know, we've joked about it before on the show. Basecamp is known for super fast replies, right? You know, a couple of minutes from that. Technically, it's called time to first reply. So from the moment you email us to the moment you get a reply back, it's a couple of minutes. But I mean, even that's kind of a diminishing returns. I mean, once you get below 30 minutes, most people are going to love you. So you can watch that number up until a certain point, but I think there's a point where, for me, I think maybe about that half hour mark, where it just doesn't matter if you're 15 minutes faster or if you're 20 minutes faster or anything like that. So I think it's, for new managers especially, when you're looking at data, make sure not to become obsessive to the point where you're trying to eke out another percentage or another minute or whatever. Have y'all seen anything like that?
Go ahead, Carolyn.
I would say I would disagree. I feel like the difference between 1 hour and 6 hours is not that big of a difference, but I would say the difference between 20 minutes and 30 minutes is big, and the difference between 5 minutes and 10 minutes is huge and things like that. So,
So if I'm a customer and I get a reply from you in 5 minutes and a reply from Jeff in 10 minutes, I'm going to like you better.
I think on the smaller numbers, the 5 minute experience is the like borderline live chat experience is different. Yeah. But this is just my intuition.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, for me personally, it was, I don't know, the way I've been thinking about it over the last couple of months, it's always, there's some Jeff Bezos quote, I can't remember it word for word, but basically he said, you know, you want to invest in things that are not going to go out of style. People are always going to love faster shipping times. If you ship something to them in a week versus shipping to them in 2 days, people are going to love it, so invest your money in that. Proud Amazon Prime user, I love it, use it every day, but they've got an option now where I can get a credit for delaying by like a day. So instead of getting in 2 days, I get it in 3 days and I get like a dollar added to my Kindle account or something
like
that.
Not worth it.
Oh, it is. It is. Yeah, because I mean, the things that I'm ordering are not things that I have to have. Like 24 hours is not going to make a difference to me. It's not like life-saving medication or anything. It's like toilet paper and Cheetos or something, you know, it's just not that important. And for me,
toilet paper a day, maybe.
Yeah, bad example, but yeah. I think, it, you know, if I email Buffer and I get a reply in 5 minutes versus a reply in 15 minutes, I'm okay either way. And if I have to add on another employee at, you know, $90,000 a year to go from 15 to 5, I think that's a big investment for questionable returns, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think that this is the critical part of tracking things, right? Is that you could actually run that experiment. I mean, you could actually test that at Basecamp. Like, you just give everybody, like, make everyone, I don't know, drink like 3 daiquiris before they start their day or something. And expect people to get slightly slower. What's that?
I mean, it is National Margarita Day, so.
Oh, see, I should have gone with margaritas. I much prefer margaritas anyway. But, like, you just get people to drink a couple beers before you start work and expect that they will, like, slow down. I don't know. I don't know how else to slow people down. But The beautiful thing about that, about tracking that data, is you could test that. And that, it, I think as a new manager, the really hard thing is identifying when you're making a decision, what the trade-offs are, right? Like as a new manager, it's like, wait, I get the ability, I have the ability to hire another person. Heck yes, I should hire another person, because then I can go faster, right? We can give more, better responses. Isn't that how that works? But that if you don't know that you're way past the point of diminishing returns, you may invest yourself, you would make the wrong investment decision, I guess, right? Like if Basecamp is already under 5 minutes, in my opinion, you don't need to hire more support people. And that actually, if there are some ideas on the table of other ways support people could be helping out the company, you might want to invest in those, right? Like that investment decision should go on the table at some point. And as a new manager, like the way you have the biggest impact on the company might be saying, you know, we already have more than enough people on support. We're going to pull some people off support because it doesn't make our customers any happier. And they're going to focus on making like one-to-many videos, or they're going to focus on, I don't know, we're going to send them to conferences, or they're going to take a trip around and like go to meetups or something. I have no idea. But that like you have the ability to do that and be confident about it because you have the data if you need it. You know, if you don't have that data even to see the trend, you know, you're, I don't know, you're always scared about messing it up. Especially you're a brand new manager, like you probably got handed something that works pretty good, and now you're like, yep, just got to keep it working pretty good.
You're just a caretaker, just get it to the next year.
Right, when in reality, what your boss probably really wants is for you to take it all apart and figure out how it works, like break it in a good way. And you kind of need the data to do that.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to add to that. I mean, Jeff nicely sums everything up. Like Jeff does.
I just steal everything that everybody else says and says it, say it another way.
It sounds so authoritative, you know?
It's just because I have a deep voice.
All right, so I guess last question we'll throw out before we end up on this one. When we do talk about, you've got all this data that you're looking at, how do you figure out which data you need to be looking at when it comes to a problem you're trying to solve? I mean, we've talked about it a little bit now with where you should invest people as far as, you know, do we need to cut reply times down by 10 minutes, or should we put them on like making help videos, or updating the help site, or going to conferences, that kind of thing. But how do you, if you're given a problem, what's some of your tips for figuring out what data you need to find an answer for it? We'll start with Carolyn on that one. Or does Carolyn just wing it since you don't have really a lot of data?
It's just such an interesting question. So a lot of the problems that, So I think there are business problems that support can solve, or at least can help with. But it's sometimes, I would guess, is delayed. So like NPS is a net promoter score is a good example of that. So like, yeah, if they have a better experience with us, hypothetically, they're more likely to score that higher. But that's also true if they have a better experience with the product. So that is not necessary. Like churn is another one, where you say like support can hypothetically help with that, win backs, that kind of thing. But that can also be affected by a whole lot of other things. So I would say in general, I personally am not given problems to solve that are not directly related to support. Like the problems that I'm given to solve are, don't have any customers that have not heard from us quickly and like in a great sort of way. That there are things like informing the product and engineering teams and tracking things like that. That is probably the closest where like it's a problem that we can really affect change quickly and accurately if we have the right data. So for something like that, like prioritizing we can rate things on a scale of, you know, 1 to 3 in terms of how frequent it is and also how drastic it is. Like, this is coming up a lot, but it's not a total blocker, versus this isn't coming up that much, but when it comes up, it completely is impossible to move forward. Like, things like that you can try and do if you're given that sort of problem, and if you're invited to even be a part of that conversation, which is great if you are. That's probably the closest I can come to a problem that we're given that we need to now figure out what data to use to solve it. Am I answering the right question?
Yeah, definitely. And so, Jeff, same question over to you. Because you are in product now, when you're looking at, you know, a problem that the team is trying to solve, like, how do you start teasing out what data is relevant?
So,
sorry, I got to end on the tough ones.
Yeah.
I like that song.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I back out far enough that it's actually a helpful answer and it's not just something specific to the way that we do it.
I think you could start specific and kind of back out from there too.
Well, I guess it's kind of similar to what I was trying to get at with the time to reply question, right? Which is like, if we're tracking, like, what's the point in faster replies? The point in faster replies is to make people, so I guess one, we want to make people happier as customers, right? So, okay, there's like some branches off of that. We would expect their feedback on our support to be better. And maybe we would also anticipate NPS ratings of support, people who've received support to be better, to be higher. Okay, so that's like some data we can look into. Other things we might want to do with faster replies are, they get a reply from our support team when they're actually still trying to do that thing. So they're more likely to go and do it. Okay, like maybe we can find some way to connect the question that they were asking to whether they actually went and did the thing. And you just start to put together this, I guess, like the thing for us, and we do this a lot on the product side, and I didn't do this a lot on the support side, but I push people to do it now, is like, we want to make a change, right? We're always changing. It's always like, Wistia is just, and many other companies are just always about, let's change this thing. This thing doesn't feel right. Let's keep pushing this thing forward. And I think it's important to, when you're doing that, list out, like, what are the assumptions? What do we think this is going to do that's really great for our customers? What are some things that we're thinking might be really bad about this change for our customers? And then you pick, like, in the product world, the way that we're doing it now is, like, you try to pick the riskiest of those assumptions and say, like, is there any way for us to possibly test this? Is there any way for us to get more confident about this assumption? So, for example, Basecamp is saying, we want to bring on more team members because we want even faster support response. And I think a very valid question is, like, well, what benefit does – I mean, that's – anytime you hire somebody, that's risky. And you're also talking about a good amount of money to bring on another person. What kind of benefit could we expect? Well, one thing you could try is you could have someone from another team fill in on support for a week, right? That's pretty much the same as like a newbie support person, right? If they're coming from some other team, do your ratings go up? Like, do people from that cohort leave better NPS reviews? I don't know. That's like something to think about. Or you could go the opposite direction and say, we're worried that if we don't hire people soon, we'll slip from 5-minute response times to 15-minute response times. And then you try my test of like Margarita Tuesday, all of our responses go to like 15 to 20 minutes, do our support ratings go down? Right? And if they don't, then what are we trying to do with this fast support? So I think that you break it down. You just have to break down the assumptions and the different things you want to affect, and then find any way, even if it's like totally just calling the customer up, like some way that you get actual insight into the effect you were trying to have, so that you're like a little bit more confident than, well, we winged it, you know, and nothing broke, so that seems to be good. I feel like then at the end of the year, you're kind of like, yeah, we did all these things and, you know, things are going good. Like, nothing is broken. and that you could be a little bit more focused in what you do if you're more confident in what you're trying to get out of it.
I like that. And like Jeff's year-end review is basically, well, I didn't break anything, so.
It's true. It's totally true, and it feels terrible when that's the case, right? Like you want to be you want to lead, and you want to take people into like a better future, not, well, we got like 50 things done as opposed to 30 things, right? And that when you're just doing stuff, like that's kind of where you're at. So I think when someone comes to you who's like a boss or someone that you really respect at your company, and they're like, I think we should do this. I think we should make this change. That's great. That is a solution. But we should understand, well, what's the problem that we're trying to solve? Are we sure that's a problem? Are we sure that's the right problem? Like, you just kind of have to be like a pain in the ass about, like, do we really know what we're trying to accomplish here? And even if it kind of delays implementing the solution, is there some sort of test we can run in the short term so that we end up more confident that that's the right move for us? It's kind of like what you got to, I feel like it's just a really important part of the process.
Yeah, so the only last thing I'll add on all of this, not that I can put a bow on anything like these gents can, when you start looking at data, don't be afraid to kind of think outside the box in terms of collecting it too. So the time to first reply example that we've kind of been going with here, you can find out how important that is to customers by, you know, giving your team margaritas or just asking them. Talk to a couple of customers and tell them, look, we've one thing that I was talking to a lady the other day, and she basically gave customers a hypothetical $50 and said, spend this $50 across this list of things that you think are important. And she was able to see, you know, all right, well, support is getting 15 of the $50. And then when you break it down, they were giving $5 for faster reply times, $3 for, I forget the technical name for it, but the time to like resolution, I think it is. It's when you actually like wrap up the case, right? You could quickly see by the customer doling out those hypothetical dollars what they prioritized. She found that it was a lot easier to, like, once you start putting money to something, you get to really see what the priorities are of that customer. So you don't have to like, don't feel like you're locked into only the data that you've got. It's okay to go out and just ask your customers what they think. So that's what we think on. Sorry, what?
I like that experiment.
Yeah, just ask. It's really cool. And I thought, like I said, the money thing was really cool. She got it from, of all places, I'm dragging this out, I'm sorry, but real quick, she got it from Southwest. Southwest did the same thing with their customers. They said, Southwest customers are talking about, we want better snacks and we want more amenities and we want more legroom and everything else. But when you took those customers and gave them a hypothetical fare amount, they found that customers were really paying for on-time flights that were cheap. And that's what they focused on. And they found that by giving customers hypothetical money and letting them actually see what the priorities were. Give it a shot. That's what we think on this one. Let us know how your team handles data and all that fun stuff. Hit us up. We're at SupportOps on Twitter. Or if you're on the site, supportops.co, click on that red beacon in the lower right corner. That brings us to my favorite part of every week. It's this week's shout outs. These are things that are making us happy. So happy we just got to shout them out at you. So, which, by the way, what happened to the Jeff and Carolyn like manual sound?
I missed that as well.
Happy to bring that back anytime.
Yeah, we'll have to bring that back next week. Speaking of bring it back, Carolyn, have you got your joke ready for this week?
I have it.
Oh, hit us with it.
Okay, so help me if I already used this one. Why couldn't the bicycle stand up on its own?
Is it something with a kickstand?
No.
No. Oh.
I don't know.
I'm horrible at these. I got nothing.
You give up?
Yeah.
It was too tired.
Oh, that's good.
Where's the rim shot for that one?
I was going too wheel. Oh. I couldn't come up with it.
You were close.
So close. All right. So with that out of the way, what's your shout out?
Wait, hang on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I thought you were going to
have an effect.
my shout out is an article. gosh, I don't have it up in front of me, but it's about basically like, here's all the challenges you're going to encounter as a startup, and here's all the challenges that you're going to encounter as like an actual real life company with a real life team. And we've just been looking at it a lot because we're in this like 70 to 80 person sort of pretty legit team with like a couple other offshoots of little other products that we're launching or side things. And we are embodying a lot of both of these. And it's been interesting to see as we're transitioning some of the things that we're no longer experiencing and some of the things that we have to look forward to. So it's just been floating around a lot in Bufferland this week. So I think it's a worthwhile read.
I remember back in the day when Bufferland had like 10 citizens. It's crazy.
Me too. People.
I mean, you're going to hit 100, like what, by the end of the year?
By the end of the year, yeah. By maybe the end of the quarter.
I didn't know if you were going to go on like a hiring spree or anything.
We have been on a bit of a hiring spree, and people and the rest of the other teams hire from my team. So I'm losing 4 people this quarter to other teams, which is really exciting, but also means I will be going on a hiring spree, yes. So get in touch.
Carolyn has 4 open spots now in the promised Bufferland. Oh, 8.
Because I was originally going to hire 4 people.
8 people. Good luck.
Thanks.
All right, Jeff, what do you got?
Wow. I am highlighting an article by Dharmesh Shah. He is the CTO, longtime CTO of HubSpot. And he had this great article that I think is, I wasn't thinking of it originally like this, but I think it's kind of related to what we talked about analytics, which is the article is called Do Fewer Things Better. He published it on Medium late last week. Yeah, I mean, I think the title pretty much covers it. You want to say no a good amount to things both in your personal and your business, your work life, that don't move you forward in the way that you think is really important. And that a lot of times in your work life, especially, you're going to get requests from lots of really smart people, lots of teammates, lots of bosses who think you should do something. And there's kind of like 2 options in that world. One is you just start saying yes, and then you just go and you try to do all of them. And the other is that you say, a structured or constructive no, where you're like, I'm not going to do that right now, but I'd like to find out what the problem is that you want to solve. And then I can look into that and better understand that. And I find the article to be really nothing new, but a great reminder of the way that even smart people struggle with this stuff.
Nice. All right. All right. So I've got since Carolyn had the joke, I'm going to throw one in and then it'll make sense with my shout out. So what do you get when you cross a snowman with a vampire?
Wait.
Snowman and a vampire.
I'm thinking of sucking blood, but it's just water. Doesn't like the sun. I don't know. I give up.
We should just have a whole show about how we can come up with the craziest jokes for that one. No. So what happens when you cross a snowman with a vampire? You get frostbite.
Oh
God. Oh no. I should have gone with that. I had frostbat. Oh.
Wow. You've been close to both of those.
Frostbat because a vampire turns into a bat and flies away. I was thinking it was like Yeah. Oh, frostbite is so good. Oh God.
Yeah.
Sure, that like jokes today.
Sure me.
That joke and other bad ones brought to you by Nice One Dad. It's a website where it literally shows you the joke, and then you click and you get another joke. It's fantastic. I found it like last week.
Sometime. Does that have an API I need to like set something up? Like recurring messages from me in a Slack channel. That's just a nice one, Dad.
Oh, I'd love it. All right. So that's my shout out. Nice one, Dad. We'll have that one and all the other ones up on the show notes, supportops.co shortly. Big thanks again to our fantastic three amigos. It's great. You did good. I like this topic. It was fun. We'll be back next week with a brand new topic about new managers. And I think Chase Littleson's going to be back next week too. So that's going to be really, really exciting. So until we see you again for that episode, have an awesome week.